What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 116, Chiropractors and Sports Medicine, recorded October 29th, 2014. Our guest this week is Dr. Eric Ramirez. He is the owner and clinical director of Chirotecture, and he'll talk a little bit more about that. But I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. With me today is...
Robert.
Bernice.
Shakira. Gabby.
Jess.
Jess. And then Dr. Eric Ramirez, if you're watching the live stream, he's the one sitting in front of the Memorial Hermann banner. If you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, using hashtag TheSMB on Twitter, where Matthew is. Matthew's on Twitter. So he hopefully will be seeing those comments using hashtag TheSMB. The Ustream social feature is Bernice. So Bernice is looking at Ustream. Again, links to all those are on our website at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where there's the live stream. If you want CEU credit, you have to register. So if you want the CEU credit, you have to go to the CEUs and register, and then it'll email you a link. And then from there, that's where you can get the CEU credits for athletic training, which are sponsored by GHATS. All right, without much further ado, we're going to get right to you, Dr. Ramirez. You're taking Jose's spot today. All right,
Dr. Ramirez, please tell us what who you are and what you do.
All right, I'm Dr. Eric Ramirez. I'm a doctor in chiropractic medicine. I own a clinic here in Pasadena focusing on sports medicine and nutrition. Basically, that's what I do, focus on clinical nutrition, handling certain diseases and conditions, and trying to maintain them with nutritional supplements and healthy eating. Same time, I also get a lot of athletes in the clinic with soft tissue injuries and try and help them out with their injuries, stuff that doesn't qualify for surgery, just your sprains and strains and muscle problems and things like that.
So a lot of soft tissue stuff, and you said you have a pretty big passion for nutrition?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Nutrition is always the fun thing because it's always changing. So you never get – there's never two patients the same when it comes to nutrition. So it's just an automatic thing for me to go into that, because if you focus just on regular chiropractic or even sports injuries to a certain extent, you're always seeing the same thing over and over. So with nutrition, you know, you always get something thrown at you that you haven't seen before, and makes you research and learn a lot of new things, keeps you on your toes.
All right, so we were talking before we started. Does your background playing football, your size, have anything to do with your passion for nutrition?
Not so much the football. That was just, they liked me being, I was an overweight football player, so they liked me being on the offensive line. They wanted to keep me fat. So there wasn't a whole lot of nutrition to go with that, except don't change anything. It was whenever I got to U of H for my undergrad. I was on the cycling team there, and that's where I got into a lot of the nutrition. There's a lot of supplements that help with that. And so going over that stuff, just wondering how it works and how it functions. And then in chiropractic school, you know, we get a full year of nutrition classes that we go through. So that gave me more of a background in nutrition and, you know, piqued my interest a little bit more. So then I started digging into it and took some postgraduate classes in clinical nutrition.
All right. So just to kind of clarify, you said you were a 240-pound junior high kid, right?
Yeah. A 13-year-old. It's 5'10", 240.
All right. So 5'10", 240. That's pretty big. And that's why I was wondering if, you know, you said you got hurt and that kind of led you to chiropractics. I was just wondering if, you know, that being 240, you said being part of a cycling team, but when did you start losing that weight?
It was in between my sophomore and junior year in high school. So that I lost quite a bit of weight really quickly. So I lost about 56 pounds over that summer. I did it with, that was when I started cycling a lot. And then just was doing crazy stuff, ab routines, and back then Soloflex was the popular thing, so I was lifting with my Soloflex 3 days a week and then riding my bike every day. I just got tired of being big and the health consequences that come with that. I actually didn't start getting those injuries though that kind of pushed me to chiropractic until later, until I was in my 20s. Then I started getting little just soft tissue things that, you know, regular medicine, there was nothing they could do. It doesn't qualify for surgery. The medication only helps a little bit, and I wanted it to be gone. You know, I couldn't play basketball anymore or anything like that. So started looking into it. Some people showed me some stretches. I was really amazed at how well the stretches work just by themselves. And then when I finally decided to do chiropractic school, I learned a lot about the soft tissue treatments and stuff and how well those work. So that's kind of how I fell into it. A few different reasons: nutrition, the injuries, and just looking, having a background, my other background with my other jobs that I talked to about, you know, pharmacy and EMS and stuff like that kind of pushed me in there.
Gotcha. I gotcha. All right. So Olivia is out today. She's she had a loss in her family. We're actually missing a couple people today. So if we're shuffling around or things aren't going as smooth, that's why. But it's all right. So one of the biggest things we're dealing with is concussions. I mean, we probably have, I don't know, 10 to 15 of them already this year. So what kind of training or how do you handle dealing with concussions?
Yeah, concussions is a big one. When I was in Cairo school, one of our we had to do an ethics paper, and I just decided to do ethics in sports medicine. And back then, this was before the NFL had their big lawsuits and all of that, and so concussions were known about, but they didn't make a big deal out of them. So when I wrote my paper, it was exactly about that, about the pressure of kids and especially like college level and higher. The pressure for them to get back into the game really quick, and they have all these concussion symptoms still. And you know, people hiding it, coaches hiding it, parents hiding it because they want their kid to go further. So that's kind of a background of what I have about concussions. And now that it's blown up really big, you know, and everybody's focusing on it, you know, basically what I do in my clinic, I usually see them after you guys have already seen them, after they've already had scans, if they kind of need it. Because if they're really bad, if they're, you know, very disoriented, or if they're vomiting, or if their pupils are off or something like that, you know, they're going to go to the ER. They're going to get a brain scan right away. So I usually get the benefit of seeing them after all of this is done. So nobody really treats the concussion directly. The main thing is rest. And then, of course, don't go do the physical exertion anymore. So in my clinic, I kind of treat everything around it. So usually with concussion, they have some sort of neck injury with it. So I'll release all the soft tissues through there, because a lot of the tight neck muscles will lead to headaches too. So if I release those out, at least we know the headaches aren't coming from just muscle tension in the base of the neck. So that's kind of what I do. Do that, and then just try to help loosen up all those upper body muscles and soft tissues that are in there, and then let the body do what it does and heal the brain as best it can. You know, and the return to play guidelines are in play, but to be honest, you guys see them on a daily basis. So we try to leave that up to the schools, the coaches, the trainers, and then if they have a primary doctor, usually leave that up to them, and then I'll just kind of manage everything else around it.
All right, so kind of what I'm understanding is that most of the way that you, and I'm not saying all chiropractors, but most of the way that you deal with concussions is the soft tissue or the muscular problems associated with the blow to the head, and not necessarily the cognitive effects besides the headache that's caused it. Is that what I'm understanding?
Kind of. I mean, you have, I've had a couple of concussion patients already this season, and you have certain rehab facilities, and I know, I'm pretty sure Memorial Hermann is one of them that has a big one over in the Med Center or Bel Air area. So one of them was a Pearland player, and he went out there, and they were doing like ocular physical therapy, like ocular vestibular physical therapy. I'm not really set up for that kind of thing. I know what it is, but you know, I think in today's medicine, we have a lot of specialists. So I think if everybody is specialized in something and they're set up for that, then that's the best way to go. Like, I could do it, but you'd be better off going to someone that specializes in it. So since I specialize in soft tissue injuries, I'll focus in on that. But yeah, if they have other deficits that I find, or any sensory neuro deficits that they have, you know, I'll send them out to a neurologist for a consult. We might get a scan if they haven't already had one. So we do our due diligence as far as diagnostic imaging and all of that. But for the most part, you know, I'm focusing in on the soft tissues, because like I said, with a concussion, you know, you're just kind of letting the body heal it. You know, you're trying to not, there's not a whole lot you can do to it. You can't go into the head and do anything to the brain. And that's where the major injury is, in the brain. So if we can focus on everything else around it, then it does a pretty good job.
All right. So again, on the same topic, do you, because for our return to play, we have to have a release from a doctor. So they'll go see a doctor, a medical doctor, and then they'll get the paper signed saying, yes, they're okay to begin the return to play protocol. Mm-hmm. Now, like I was saying earlier, obviously Memorial Hermann's a big part of what we do here. So we go see Dr. Summer Ott, and then, you know, she does the impact testing and those kind of things. And she'll tell us, you know, all right, they need to be, you know, this many days symptom free, and then they'll come back to the clinic, and then after that they'll begin the return to play. Do you feel comfortable like signing that paper, really saying you know, you're okay to begin the return to play per your athletic trainer or whatever your school has set up?
Yeah, we can definitely do that and fill out the paperwork. But like I said, if I would feel comfortable in the fact that because if I see anything else, I've already sent it out to another specialist. So there's always more than one set of eyes looking at my patients. If it's something really simple and there wasn't any concussion involved with it, of course, they're probably only going to see me for the soft tissue. But yeah, with concussions, that's more of a higher level injury just because of everything that goes along with it. So with them, they're usually seeing somebody else besides just me. But if I'm the primary one, if they come to me first, then, you know, I guess I'm on, I'm with that patient. I'm on the board, I guess, you know, that's my patient. Everything that comes from me that, you know, I'm liable for all of that. So every now and then, I mean, I guess you would send somebody out like, I don't feel comfortable handling this by myself. You know, let's send it out to another specialist or something. So with that, in that regard, I guess, as long as they're a specialist, they'll probably get the referral, but you know, we usually don't refer out to like a family doctor because just as far as like, you know, they focus in on that, like, you know, probably 70% of what they see is people that are sick and stuff like that. So I see a lot more soft tissue injuries than they do. So that's just why we don't really refer out to a family doctor unless they need medication or something like that. But as far as concussion, yeah, you're looking at the neuro, or some sort of specialist. That handles the therapy for that, or even a therapist that handles that kind of rehab.
Okay. And so I know we have some questions about some of the other stuff you do, and we try to watch some videos so that they know kind of what they're asking you about. But Jess?
Can you tell us what kinesio taping is?
Yeah, so kinesio taping. Oh. Actually, kinesio is actually a brand name. It was the original tape that was made. He was a Japanese chiropractor, Kenzo Kase. And so there's different ones. You have KT, you have Rock Tape. Rock Tape's pretty popular right now with CrossFit and everything. And they all act a little bit different, but they're made basically for the same thing. So what I use it for in my clinic, since I'm working with the soft tissues, is you have this fascial tissue and it kind of spreads throughout the body. And it's similar to the skin. It's vast like the skin, but there's different layers of it. So when I'm releasing that soft tissue out, what I want it to do is keep those layers separated. So the kinesio tape adds a little bit of a lift, like a microscopic lift to those tissues, and helps it glide a little bit better. So in essence, it's making my treatment last a little bit longer when you're out of my office. Another thing that it does is it increases the lymphatic supply, the blood supply to an area, so it helps it heal a little bit faster. They've done they've had some studies or some research that have pictures of people that have a lot of hematomas, a lot of bruising, and they put the tape over it in what they call a fan pattern. And when they take the tape off, you can see where the bruise is gone from where the tape was. So that shows how it increases that lymphatic drainage for all that trash tissue. It adds a little bit of support. It's not very supportive. It's nothing like athletic tape. So it allows the patient or the athlete to keep their mobility, but at the same time, it decreases a little bit of the pain. The last thing I use it for is the kind of a proprioceptive stimulus. So there's receptors in the skin and the muscle, and whenever that tape is oscillating, the way it has the wave pattern on the adhesive, it stimulates those receptors to kind of relax the muscles. It can kind of act like there's one brand that says it kind of acts like an acupressure point, the way it lifts up on a certain spot. So it helps with a little bit of the pain control. A lot of times we find that athletes, you probably see the same thing with the athletic taping. They felt better when you taped them. So even when they're healed, they still want the tape. Like they'll keep telling you to wrap their ankle every game, even though it's been a year since they sprained their ankle. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same with the K tape, kinesio tape. you know, they get used to it. It helped their pain when we first did it, and so they just always want it. After that, they'll go buy a roll and then just keep putting it on the same way we did. But that's kind of mostly what it's for. If you ask me personally, I think it, you know, it has, it's a small percentage of relief or something that it's going to do, but it's something. It's not going to be the major thing. I see a lot of people put it on without seeing any special, you know, they don't go see a doctor. They don't go see anybody. They watch these videos on YouTube and they just put the tape on. Probably not going to get a whole lot of relief from that because the tissue underneath it is still damaged and you got to get it worked out first. The tape just helps support that treatment instead of actually getting rid of the pain by itself.
See, that's the big thing with me. I mean, to me, it honestly just seems like voodoo or like, All right, well, let's just put this tape on. It's going to magically help. And you know, that's kind of what you're saying is that if you don't do the soft tissue work or the stuff to fix it first, all the tape is going to do is look cool or look dumb, one of the two.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do wear it. It's funny because, you know, they have the different colors and I know Rock Tape and then a couple of other brands, they're using some crazy colors out there. And of course the CrossFit crowd loves it. You know, they have cow pattern Rock Tape and, you know, of course they love it. But it's like you said, I think a lot of it becomes a fashion statement, like, oh, let's put these crazy patterns on there. And if you look at the Olympics, like, there's some crazy patterns. And even though I'm certified in Kinesio, of course Rock has their own, Spider Tech has their own, I'm certified in Kinesio, like I look at some of these tape jobs they have in the Olympics and I'm like, I don't even know what they're taping on there. It's like almost like they just shoved a bunch of tape on their shoulder to look kind of cool. But yeah, it definitely works better if you get the treatment first and then use it as a supportive treatment.
All right, and then so just talk a little bit more about the training to use that, because you talked about the YouTube video, and I've never been trained to put it on, and sometimes I'll work these tournaments on SI jobs, and kids would be like, hey, can you put this on me? I'm like, well, I don't know how to do it, but if you tell me how to do it, I'll do it, just because they bought this material, they want it on, that's fine. I can use my scissors, cut the tape, and stick it to you.
Yeah.
But talk about a little bit more about the technique or the, like, how long was the training and how much of a disservice am I doing those kids by just putting it on as they say to put it on?
Yeah, so when we went through the training, and I don't even know if this is something you're supposed to say in public, but, you know, we go through the training, like, our instructor, he's like, it's tape, you know, like you can't really go wrong. It's tape. You're not going to kill somebody. You're not going to injure an area. So we're just wondering, are we wasting our money by buying it? You know, if they bought it, hey, that's their thing, you know? But yeah, like when you go through the training, of course, you have to know where the muscles are. You have to know where the tissue goes, which way the muscles move. So you have to know the biomechanics of it. The more you know about the biomechanics, the better at it you're going to be, because there's no set, like, protocol. So if you look at YouTube, it looks like there's just these protocols. Like, it's always going to be that tape. If I have a patient come in, there's probably about 15 or 20 different tapes I can do just for the ankle. And it always depends on when I'm doing my treatment, how it feels, like where the restrictions are at, and what tissue I work on. That's where I'm going to put the tape. And I'll use a different pattern 3 or 4 different times. I'll tell the patient, I'm going to do 3 or 4 different ones. You let me know which one felt the best. We'll keep doing that. So I don't think you're really doing them a disservice, because they've already paid for the tape and you're not charging them to put it on. So you're putting it on them. There's nothing you can really do wrong. But when you go through the certification, you know, they teach you, like, stretch the tissue and not the tape for certain applications. And then sometimes you're going to stretch the tape and not the tissue for other applications. And then there's different patterns. You have, like, an I strip, which is just the tape straight on there. You have the Y, which is where you cut it in the middle and have the two tails. You have the fan, which is, you know, like 5 different tails that spread out. There's other donut holes and things like that that you can do for different areas of the body. So that's mostly what you learn in the certification, is all those different types of applications. But as far as the theory, you know, if you're just thinking about the tissue that you're trying to help, you know, pull a little bit of support to, then you can't really go wrong. You just stick the tape over the top of it and it does something. It might not do exactly what you want it to, but it's doing something.
Nothing else than mentally.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they'll look cool in their pictures later.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move forward from there.
What about acupuncture?
So acupuncture is actually kind of a, you know, like medicine has specialists. So, you know, you go through chiropractic school, we all learn the same thing. And when we get out, we take extra classes. Like I took classes in soft tissue. I took a class in Graston technique. That's where we use the tools to release the soft tissue. I did the taping certification. So acupuncture is one of your, I guess, graduate level things. It's extra hours. And then you have to take a board exam to become certified in acupuncture or licensed in acupuncture. I never did it, but I have seen some colleagues that have done it, and it seems to work really well with pain. We had a really good example in the clinic. One of my friends was doing it, and he had a stroke patient, and she wasn't all there mentally because of the stroke. So placebo wasn't really in effect on it. And I know it's just a case study, but she was having a lot of knee pain, and he was treating it, soft tissue, doing all the stuff that we do as chiropractors, and it just wasn't really getting better. So one day he's like, well, let's do this acupuncture technique. So he actually, there's a acupuncture, there's different ones where you just use the needles. You can use, I forget what their term is that they call it, but they kind of, they have like a thread or something that they burn on it. But there's one that they hook it up to the electrical stimulation. And so he did the one with the electrical stimulation and the acupuncture around the knee. Well, they came in, this was probably like a Thursday. They came back for their next visit on Tuesday. And like I said, she's not really there mentally, so she talks a little bit, but she doesn't really know what's going on too much. Well, my friend was going through the, you know, her symptoms while they're doing her daily note, and the husband was like, my friend asked about the knee pain, and the husband was like, well, you know what? I didn't even notice, but she hasn't complained about it at all. And so you asked the patient, and she's like, my knee was hurting, you know, because like I said, she wasn't really all there, but just coming from the husband, he's like, she hasn't even complained about the knee at all. And that was about a 4-day period. So it seems to work pretty good. And I've seen a lot of other research that works. As far as like our Western science, we'll never understand why that stuff works. But you know, Chinese medicine has been using it for over 1,000 years, and they use these meridians and they call it qi, and they seem to have these certain spots, and there's nothing, I mean, we can't say that we know how it works, but at the same time, we can't disprove it either. So it seems to work for a lot of people for pain. I don't know about the rest of the stuff they use it for, but for pain, it seems to work really well.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know what it is. It's sticking a needle in somebody's skin at certain points, but it's not just sticking a needle randomly. I mean, you need to kind of know what you're doing, obviously.
Yeah, they have certain, you know, taps that they do, and then they have certain, like, you know, where they go in and out with a needle and stimulate that little pressure point or the acupoint. But yeah, it's really weird how it works. It's one of those that I don't think we'll ever have the science to prove or disprove. It's just one of those things. If it works for you, then keep doing it.
And you said you don't do that, right?
No, I don't do acupuncture. You know, I decided to focus on sports injuries and nutrition. So nutrition is my thing. It's a 2-year program. Halfway done with that. So it's just, you have to kind of pick and choose what you do. You can do all of it, but it's going to take you your whole career. You know, each one is like a year or two of extra coursework plus board exams and everything.
Yeah.
So I just focused on those.
All right. So before we started on the show, you were talking about doing soft tissue work, and you're telling me I should come over and try it out. So it's definitely something I'm interested in, because as I was saying before, I don't have any personal experience with chiropractors other than there's a lot of athletic trainers who don't like chiropractors. And I was on that boat, like I said before, because no personal experience. So I was just buying other propaganda. So tell me about this soft tissue work, because one of the questions I have is, I was at a tournament and we had a girl with a quad strain.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have a guy that's a chiropractor come over, and he's just shoving his finger deep into that quad. And to me, it's like, there's already damage to the tissue. There's already bruising. Why are you going to be bruising and damaging the tissue more? So explain a little bit more of that to me.
So the way we kind of go through it, you have a better background, but with the students here is they're kind of like at the level of my patients. They don't understand the anatomy and everything as well. So I'll kind of use my layman's terms, I guess, to explain it. You know, when you have, let's say you have a quad strain. So we know any kind of sprain or strain at any level is some sort of tearing. You know, a minor strain is probably 5-10% tearing of the tissue. So anytime the body gets damaged like that, the body goes into this protective mode. And so your body's trying to repair that tissue as fast as it can. So what happens is you start to get these adhesions, a little bit of minor scar tissue. It's not scar tissue like from surgeries. That's major thick scar tissue. This is a minor decrease in your mobility, increase your pain kind of adhesions. So those adhesions there are what we're trying to release out. So with those proprioceptors, with the fascial tissue that we talk about, if you have a dysfunction of the fascial tissue, it causes a lot of pain. So think of like the compression garments that a lot of athletes wear. Mm-hmm. They've shown in endurance athletes when they wear those compression garments, they're actually able to go further. And the reason is because it gives more support to that muscle. It gives the muscle something to contract against. Well, that's what the fascial tissue does, the myofascial layer of it. So if you have, some of the layers sticking to each other, or if the links get jumbled up, and I'm doing all this stuff with my hands, but I know nobody can really see it that well. But if the links get jumbled up, now it gets kind of stuck. That causes pain. Sometimes you get like a herniated trigger point, and so one layer will poke through the other layer. And so every time that muscle contracts, you feel that sharp shooting pain. And so the reason we get in there with our thumb and just dig in is because we're breaking up all those adhesions. We're breaking up that tissue, regaining that range of motion. The reason it works when we do that instead of when the body damages, because when the body damaged it, it was just this random occurrence. It wasn't controlled. And so when we're going through breaking up those adhesions, we're allowing the body to reform those linear bonds that go in a certain range of motion. So that helps get that back. It's the same thing as physical therapy after a surgery. If we just let it sit there, the body's going to make this crisscross pattern and create that scar tissue. But if we start moving that joint the directions it's supposed to go, the body automatically makes those that soft tissue follow that line of range. So that's kind of what we're doing whenever we dig in real deep. We have to get down into the layers. The soft tissue treatment that I do is based off of what's called a fascial distortion model. The actual fascial distortion model, I think now is maybe trademarked and they have classes and stuff like that. I learned it through another doctor. So I can't actually say that I'm certified in it, but basically the book that they have out is like an FDM type book. And I learned out of that book. And then seeing the other doctor do the treatments. So what we do is when the patient comes in with a certain injury, they'll always point to it or they'll do some kind of hand motion or describe it in a certain way. Each one of those descriptions tells me what kind of dysfunction it is. And so my treatment will be different for each one of those. So a lot of your tendonitises, they're pulling right on where the tendon attaches into the bone. So we know that tissue is real thick and fibrous right at the anchor point. When there's a lot of dysfunction, that thick fibrous tissue starts to encroach into the softer collagen tissue. So we have to get in there, and that's probably the most painful one. We have to get in there and push that thick fibrous tissue back down in towards the bone so that we can get that function back. So I guess the short of all of it is the soft tissue work is to regain function and decrease pain. So that's why we're going in there and doing all those things that cause pain, but it releases the pain. You'll be sore afterwards, but you know, that sharp pain, that pain that robbed you of your certain activities, that starts to go away pretty quickly.
All right, so if you're talking about realigning the fibers, would stretching that quad that was strained, would it not do the same thing?
It won't. If you stretch it, it won't actually release those adhesions. So, to some extent, the stretching will help, but you'll always have those adhesions. So it's a faster way of doing it. So eventually your body is going to normalize, and then you're going to keep stretching, and you'll probably be fine if you're just a weekend warrior or even maybe a high school athlete that's not really focused on getting to the next level, you know, because there's a different level of commitment to it. But now if you're like a superstar athlete or you're a professional athlete, they don't like to waste a lot of time. So when we get in, and the faster we can get them back on the field, the better. And then the faster we can get them back to their function, the better they're going to be in the long run. Because anytime we let an injury just kind of heal on its own and we're just stretching it or just icing it or putting some stem on it, those adhesions will always stay. And maybe through luck or through certain activity, you can get some of those to come out. But a lot of the research they did on the fascial tissue is that those adhesions just kind of stay in there, and then they start building up and building up, and then you're more prone to other injuries and things like that. So there's another aspect to the soft tissue work, and it's like a sports specific rehab. And so that plays into it. The actual soft tissue work, you're looking at maybe between 4 to 6 visits for the pain to go down. And after that, it's all rehab stuff. Because in my mind, and a lot of therapists and chiropractors that do this sort of thing, there's a reason why it happened. So, you know, if you just have some knee pain and it's because you've been running around and you're off balance, then we have to get you back on balance. So if we just fix the knee and rehab the knee and we don't focus in on the core or the hip stabilizers, then we're just going to injure that knee again later on down the line. So it's kind of like a two-part approach to it, the soft tissue work being actually the shortest part of it and the rehab being the most important part.
All right, so my mom used to go to a chiropractor, and like I said, I don't know much, but I just remember like having adjustments every mm-hmm. week or something like that. Mm-hmm. And again, when I was young, I don't remember, and I wasn't interested in athletic training, but it seemed you're talking a lot about rehab now, but I don't remember anybody that goes to a chiropractor saying anything about doing exercises or rehab. So is rehab important in chiropractics, or is it, you know, hey, we're going to do this stuff to release the tissue and I'll go somewhere else for rehab?
It depends, really. There's a way I explain it. Like, it's kind of an inside joke in chiropractic. You know, I always say like, oh, those are the old school chiros that just adjust. And then us new school guys, we come out and we're doing the nutrition, we're doing the acupuncture, we're doing the soft tissue, we're doing the rehab. It doesn't really follow that way. It's more of a business model. Some chiros, when they come out, they believe so much in the power of the adjustment, that's all they want to do. And so there's a lot of clinics out there that you go see those, and you go in and they just adjust you. And so everybody knows it as a pop. We're not actually looking for the pop, but usually you pop whenever they do the adjustment or whenever we do the adjustment. So I guess to shorten it, we'll just say, you know, you come in, I pop your joints, your back, or whatever, and then you leave. Or we might do a little bit of stem and ice like you guys do here. And that's the extent of that kind of clinic. So those clinics are usually the high volume clinics. Like, you know, we got to get people in and out. So kind of set up like the medical clinics are now. And then you have clinics that they have a full physical therapy suite in there. They have all the equipment and kind of like a weight room. And they'll get people doing exercises, building up their muscles again. They can do post-surgical rehab and all that kind of stuff. You know, we take a board exam on physical therapy also. So we are trained in the different exercises and techniques. And then you have sports clinics. There's not a lot of them, but I worked at one that was on the other side of town. And now I have mine that's here. So, you know, you find them spread out around town, but there's clinics like mine where you come in, you get the soft tissue treatment. And then you get like sports specific rehab. So like I said, I'm focusing a lot on core imbalances, hip stabilizing, muscles being weak, throwing off your pelvis and throwing off your gait. And then same time, like for postural stuff, you know, we're working on postural muscles because everybody has those rounded shoulders. And so that's the kind of rehab I do. I'll focus in on a specific weak muscle group and we'll specifically exercise that one to build it back up. And then you can go back to the gym after that and build up all your other big muscles that you've been working on. So I guess, you know, it just depends on what clinic you go to. There's definitely a difference between the clinics. Like some of them will just only adjust or pop. And then some of them will have specialties where they do nutrition and rehab and everything like that. So it kind of just depends on where you go.
What training in emergency medicine do you have?
Yeah, I was wondering if you knew about me to ask that question. Because I was actually an EMT while I was in undergrad. So I did EMS for 8 years. Actually, I didn't really run a 911 service too much because since I was a student, I couldn't work the 24-hour shifts. So I was still going to college while I was an EMT. So I ended up working with a security company. Because they had 8-hour shifts. And so I worked in a cush job. I was just at a corporate office and I would sit there and wait for people to get hurt. And I was the supervisor to all the security guards. So I was kind of like a security guard, but I didn't know what in the world I was doing. And I was just waiting for people to get hurt. So my training, you know, doing the rotations and stuff for EMT, I did rotations in the Bayshore Emergency Department. I did back then when I was doing it, Rural Metro was the 911 service here. Now it's East Texas Medical Center. So I did some rotations with Rural Metro on the ambulance. So kind of saw quite a bit with that, but yeah, it makes a big difference having that background. We do one semester of, emergency medicine in chiropractic school. And, you know, they teach you the basics on CPR and what to do when you see somebody unresponsive and that kind of thing. And we're experts in spinal care and, neuro problems like nerve issues. So even if you don't really know emergency medicine as a chiro, you know that someone's unresponsive. If they got hurt, you should be thinking in your head, there could be something wrong with that C-spine, with that spinal cord. So we're not going to move them around. But as an EMT, that just it's easy. It's in my head. Like as soon as I see somebody down, I know what to do. So I can go right into that mindset. And it's definitely a different mindset than normal. We had somebody pass out in the student clinic there, not student clinic, the actual Moody clinic there at the college where we do our internship and residency. And it was crazy to see all these like attending doctors. They're our instructors and they're running around like they didn't know what to do. And I didn't know about it. I was in the computer lab doing some reports, and my friend whose patient it was, he actually stabilized the patient as much as he could and then told one of his attendings to call an ambulance because everybody else was running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And I was like, wow, you know, like, it's definitely a different mindset. Like if you're not ready for it and somebody's there and they're bleeding out and, or they're unresponsive, if you're not used to it, it takes a while to get used to that sort of thing. So I feel pretty blessed that I have that background. Like I'm able to handle those kind of things pretty easily. Cause I've seen them.
Well, that leads right into our next thing. You know, like I was saying, I think it's Folkman, Dr. Jack Folkman. Mm-hmm. He helps take care. He's, I guess, team doctor for Dickinson High School for my buddy John Harmon. And, you know, they have a really good working relationship. But I'm wondering, on the sidelines, have you spent any time on the sidelines at a high school? And then, you know, what do you see as your role there on if you were to join us on the sidelines?
Yeah, so if, you know, if I was out on the sideline, there was a really good sports chiropractor that was a, you know, he kind of talked to you about setting up a sports practice and being known as a sports doctor in your, like if you're in a smaller town. And one of the things that he said is don't get in the athletic trainer's way. You know, your job, your specialty is to be there. Mine is to be in my clinic. There's a chiropractic sports physician certification that you can do. And it also turns into a diplomate if you do the full 2 years. But during that 1 year of the certification, we actually go over, that like sideline, being on the sidelines and doing like sports medicine in the field. My background as being an EMT, you know, if someone's down, I'm going to go out there with a trainer if they need me. If it looks like a blown out knee or something like that, you know, we could go out there and do the orthopedic exams, make sure, you know, see what's going on with that. But if the trainer has it, you know, my job at that point will be to further assess it or give it more of a diagnosis, I guess, and then decide if we need to send them out for imaging or they can just sit it out on the sideline. So really, I guess my answer to that would be it's definitely a supportive role because we want the athletic trainer because you guys see them all the time. We want you to be the main one in there. And if there's anything that we can help out with, we'll definitely do that. And then if there's anything that, let's just say it's an emergency, you know, we got to revive this patient, then everybody goes in as a team. You know, you can't do it by yourself.
Right.
So everybody goes in as a team. One person has to call the shots. It always works that way. So as long as somebody's able to take the lead and it doesn't, I guess the person with the highest certification or license or whatever kind of takes over at that point. But, you know, if I have a really good athletic trainer that knows what he's doing in an emergency situation, I'm going to lean on him as much as I can. Because like I said, you know, two heads better than one just going at it. So if we're both doing, as long as we're not clashing, everything works good. So yeah, our role is, you know, to further assess any injuries that need to be assessed. And then, you know, maybe you can't really provide a whole lot of treatment on the sideline, but you know, you guys are king at taping. You can tape way faster than any other profession can. Yeah, you know, if there's any kind of minor stuff or even moderate stuff that can be taped, you know, that's what you guys do. So I guess we're there for mostly the assessments and everything like that.
All right. So do you have any experience on the sidelines?
As an EMT, briefly, but as a chiro, no, I haven't been on any sidelines. It's a little bit more difficult here, you know, because you guys have that pretty awesome sponsorship with Memorial Hermann. I mean, right. They provide a lot for you guys. so that's just where I've been set up, you know. And then the other place I was at was Katy, and it's pretty much the same thing out there. You know, Katy's a hotbed for especially football. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they also have Memorial Hermann sponsorship out there. So, you know, the opportunity just hasn't really been there. But, yeah, it's definitely something that would be fun to do. I have done sidelines, not in a, you know, a high school situation, but like volleyball tournaments, different runs and things like that. As when I was an EMT in college, we hosted some bike races, so I worked those, and actually hosted a mountain bike race, and somebody came down and their chain ring just like ate up their whole gastroc, their whole calf. I mean, it was just like hanging out, and yeah, so I got to see that awesome injury. Didn't have my bag with me, had to run a mile to go get my bag and run back. This guy's bleeding out on there, so it was a bad situation. But yeah, so I have some experience in sporting events, just not really football sidelines at this point, just because of the way everything's set up now. I'm not in a really small town where they could really use a chiro to go be on the sideline, because that would be a big benefit for them.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. I got you. All right, so you've talked a lot about nutrition, but we've not talked anything specific. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're doing there? And, I mean, are you, like, into the paleo, or are you more into supplements, or that kind of thing? Just talk about your nutrition.
Yeah, like, there's different approaches that you can do with nutrition. And, you know, paleo is a... it's definitely a buzzword, and so anything that becomes a buzzword, it gets a lot of negative publicity, I guess. It starts to get negative after a while, after everybody's jumped on board. It depends on how you look at it. I like paleo, but only because there's a testing that I do. So there's specialized testing. It's a blood test that I can run, and it's measuring your delayed response. So, you know, some people are allergic to peanuts, or they're allergic to shrimp. If they eat that, they have an immediate response. They start breaking out in hives, they get whelps, they have trouble breathing, they get heart starts racing, those kind of anaphylactic type responses. With this one, it's more of a delayed response. So you're eating these certain foods, and you might not ever really see that, but inside your body, your immune system is still reacting to it, and it's causing this inflammation. And over time, if you keep doing that, it can start to turn into these different conditions. So in my case, I actually got started more in depth on it, kind of figuring out what's going on with myself. I have like eczema on my hands, and it was starting to get worse and worse. And going through chiro school, we have a dermatology class, and kind of figured out, okay, it's this certain form of eczema called dyshidrotic eczema. And so didn't really know what to do with it, would put creams on it and everything. My wife was working for a dermatologist, so I'd get a lot of creams. And then when I started doing just probiotics and then taking out wheat from my diet and everything, it started to just go away on its own. So a lot of the paleo stuff, I'll put a patient on it mostly because it makes you get rid of your refined sugars and your processed foods, so all your fried foods, all your fast food and that kind of stuff. So if you think about it, if that's what makes them get off those foods, then it's a good thing, because that's already going to be a health benefit for them.
Right.
But, you know, like the paleo lifestyle is focusing mainly on foods that we eat they say, like, eat like a caveman. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you know, we eat foods that we can hunt and gather and grow and that kind of thing. So the other part of the clinical nutrition is that, you know, if somebody comes in with diabetes, I'm going to try and improve their diet, maybe put them on some supplements that help their insulin response work a little bit better. And then, you know, there's different things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, all those things have a different protocol that we can work on to try and get them off of those long-term medications that they get stuck on. So that's kind of the basis of clinical nutrition. It gets, like I said earlier, it's never the same with anybody. So it gets really, really in depth, but I guess, to kind of summarize it all, you know, we work on those certain conditions, but there's testing that we do. There's different blood tests that we can run that tell me your nutrition status. And there's also a test I can run to tell me what foods you shouldn't be eating because they're causing this inflammation response in your body. So that's most of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just some of the things you're talking about and some of the things that I learned, or I don't know if I learned, but I kind of stuck to, you know, if there's a problem with the knee, then usually I'll just check out the knee.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more, you know, I'm real thankful for Twitter because I learn a lot. People are always like, you know, don't forget the whole chain. You know, maybe the problem is actually the ankle, or maybe the problem is actually the hip. And that's kind of what you're saying here is you were saying, you know, if there's a problem with the knee, you check the hip and the core muscles. And then kind of with the nutrition, you know, if I'm having skin issues, well, it maybe it's the whole system, you know, because we're designed as one system to work to, you know, for everything to work together. And so maybe it's just you need to look at outside of the specific problem.
Yeah.
So I like that idea and concept, and I just need to practice it more. So
yeah.
All right, so we're gonna talk a little bit more about what you actually see in your clinic. I'm guessing the most common thing you see in your clinic is gonna be back pain, because you know, that's what I always think of: go get your back popped or aligned, get your hips aligned, and your back will be fine.
Yeah. So. It definitely is. Like anytime you say like I always tell people, you know, I'm a sports doctor. You know, the term sports medicine, a lot of people think that means you're a medical doctor doing sports medicine. Well, really, that's not what sports medicine means. It's anybody that's doing any kind of treatment for an athlete. Like, you guys are doing sports medicine. I'm doing sports medicine. The orthopedics are doing sports medicine. You know, everybody's kind of doing their own therapy for it. So, yeah, I guess back pain is kind of the most that I would see, just because somebody off the street, they're like, oh, you're a chiro, my back hurts. And so I get that all the time. But really, through my marketing efforts and people that I reach out to, I'm starting to get a lot more athletes in. So I see a lot of, and it's funny because they seem to follow each other in. Like, once I get one knee, then it's like three or four knees in a row will come in the next 2 weeks. And then once I get an elbow or a shoulder, then an elbow and a shoulder, like, they just keep following each other. And I go in these groups and we just kind of keep going around all the different joints. But yeah, if I had to pick one, it would probably be low back pain. And then neck and upper back pain would be second. And then all the different, you know, sports types injuries would come in after that. Just because of what everybody thinks of what chiros do, you know. A lot of them, I tell them I do sports stuff, and they're like, "Well, you just like, if I hurt my back doing sports?" And I'm like, "No, have you hurt anything? It's, you know, it's soft tissue, any joint, any muscle, any bone or anything like that. As long as the thing's not broken, you know, take a look at it and try and work on it."
All right. So that being said, since you only work on backs, all right, what are some of your go-to treatments? Say someone comes in for a back pain, because, you know, honestly, I feel a little undertrained to evaluate the back properly. I just, you know, I went through an internship program, and so anytime I can learn something from somebody who's an expert in that area, that's definitely what I want to do. So what are some of the things that you can do that I may be able to do here?
Oh, okay. Here. Yeah. Cause you know, as being a chiro, the gold standard is always going to be the adjustment. We're always going to lean on that adjustment because it's something that we do that nobody else does. You know, DOs, which is basically like a cross between a chiro and a medical doctor, but they lean a lot more towards medicine now than they used to. You know, they learn adjustments, but their adjustment is different than ours. And plus, they learn it in their first 4 years of school, and then when they do their 6 to 8 years of residencies and all that, they'd never really do it anymore. So the training's a lot different. The amount of adjustments that they do is a lot different. So basically, you know, we're the ones that do that. I think physical therapists are starting to do a lot of mobilizations and a little bit of what we call a thrust to kind of cavitate that joint. But all in all, we're the ones that kind of own that treatment. So that's always our gold standard. You can't really do it here, but mobilization is something that you can really do. You know, you take that joint and you, as long as you know how that joint's moving, you can kind of get it and kind of take it through that plane and just kind of bounce it up and down and get it moving. Because a lot of what I believe in is restrictions. So I don't do a lot of the nerve interference type thing that chiropractic was founded on. I always feel like if I'm doing the adjustment and it has that added benefit of getting rid of that nerve interference and making the body healthy overall, then that's great. But my thing, I'm really focused on motion, range of motion and movement and biomechanics. So if I can get that back joint, it's stiff, it's hurting. If I can get it moving again, that's better for me. So in your case, focusing on the back muscles, the soft tissue, but, you know, we have the lumbar paraspinals that go up, the spinal erectors on each side. So everybody will kind of focus in on that. But then if you look at it, if you go down into the glute medius, which goes up on the iliac crest on the backside, that is a hip stabilizer. So that could be tightening up and causing some of the pain. Then you look at the piriformis, which goes over the sciatic nerve. So if we can release out that piriformis and decrease some of that pressure, maybe that sciatic nerve won't hurt so much. Then there's two major muscle groups to look at when you're talking about back pain. Hamstrings, if they're tight hamstrings, they attach into the iliac. I was about to say iliac crest. Now I went blank on the ischial.
Tuberosity?
Yes, there we go. Thank you. So down on the ischial tuberosity, the hamstrings attach in there. And so if they're really tight, they're not allowing the pelvis to open and close because they're just staying tight and they're pulling on the bottom part of the pelvis. If you look at how the lumbar spine attaches into the pelvis through the sacrum, if that pelvis is locked in, now it puts all that pressure. I keep hitting this microphone. It puts all the pressure on the lumbar spine, and then it starts adding more pain because, you know, lumbar spine is not made to handle all of that pressure. The other major muscle group to look at is the hip flexors. So you have the iliopsoas. When that's really tight, it attaches in on the anterior portion of the lumbar spine and then comes down through the pelvis and attaches into the inside of the femur. So when that's really tight, what that does is it's pulling the lumbar spine forward. And so you have a natural curve to carry out your load, you know, mm-hmm. your weight bearing. That's just making that curve even more. Now it's putting even more pressure on the low back. So we can release those two out through stretching, through stem, through any kind of soft tissue work that you can do. You know, that's going to help that condition over time. Back pain is funny in that it took a long time for it to happen. And so it's going to take a while for it to go away too. So a lot of patients want instant results. The older you get, the older you get, the more you got to understand that it probably took not just a couple years, but maybe even 10, 15 years for that to start to develop. So for me to even be able to fix it in a month is kind of a miracle because, you destroyed it for so long. Mm-hmm. In this setting, you got a lot of younger people, so they can get away with a whole lot more than the rest of us that are starting to hit our 30s and then older than that. We're starting to feel certain things a lot more than we used to,
Right.
You used to be able to just bounce up and be like, I don't need to stretch. I don't need to do this. You don't, but you're going to pay for it later if you don't do it now.
Right.
So that's kind of the thing that we try to hit on.
All right. So it's kind of random, but you said you did a lot of cycling. I actually ride my bike to and from work a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been off and on, I have back pain, and I don't keep track of if it's associated, but if you're saying if the hip flexors are tight, pulling my lumbar spine out of alignment, is that something, usually you find tight hip flexors in runners, but I don't know, we don't have cycling here, so I don't deal with a whole lot of cyclers. Does that correlate?
Yeah, so like you just basically thought of something that took me years of just never really thought about it, and you thought about it really quickly. So if you look at the position where in like I was a road cyclist, so I'm in the drops on my mm-hmm. bike, so I'm in that tucked position. So if you look at that and then you think about what muscle we're using to get our knees back up here to go through the pedal stroke, it's that hip flexor. And then if you look at how low my leg goes on the bottom part of that pedal stroke, my knee doesn't even extend straight. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to keep a bend in it. It's supposed to stay somewhat flexed,
right?
And so with that, if you look at that angle, my hip never really even goes, it doesn't even go back to normal. Like if I'm standing straight up, much less extend back. So a runner, they're bringing their knees up, but at the same time, they're kicking their leg back. So mm-hmm. we're contracting and stretching that hip flexor each time. A cyclist, you're just contracting it. So yeah, over time, you just got a muscle that's chronically shortened. And so now it just creates a lot of havoc. Like not only is it getting really tight and putting pressure on the back, but the actual muscle from being a shortened muscle becomes weak. And so if you isolate that iliopsoas out on a lot of cyclists, you'll be able to just push their leg down really easily. Like there's just no strength there because an overstretched muscle, like a strain, is a weak muscle, but an over shortened muscle, a chronically shortened muscle, is also weak because those fibers overlap too much and they're not able to get back into that what we call cocking phase. And so if they're not able to get in the cocking phase, they can't contract or they can't function normally. So no matter if it's short or overstretched, it's still a weak muscle. And so there's different ways of looking at weaknesses in muscle. And that's one of them. It's more of a functional thing. But that's a good test to look at, like something wrong with it. And that one's not a fun one to strip out. So if there's any way you can stretch that thing out, it's better to to start doing that, because if you come into my clinic and I got to strip it out, it's not fun. I've had it done to me, and it's not fun at all. It's just in an awkward spot. It's through your groin, and someone's just digging in with all their pressure in through that area, and then making you move your leg up and down while they're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure, you know, if I ride my bike to work and then I come sit in a chair,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, I may go walk around the gym some, and then I go ride my bike back home. My, like you just said, the whole time my hip flexors are in the shortened position. So mm-hmm. I got to, you know, I don't know if you saw, we have some exercise or balance chairs here.
Yeah.
Because I want to create movement within the students. And, you know, those things aren't extremely comfortable to sit on. So maybe if I sit on those, I'm more likely to get up and move rather than just sit down in this chair and work all day. But that's cool. I'm glad, because I have been having, like I said, on and off back pain. And, you know, I'll do stretches and exercise, but then just like everybody else, it stops hurting me. So I stop mm-hmm. doing the exercises, even though I'm trained to do better than that. I just, for some reason, can't do it. Yeah, can't
it's, keep it's, going. The, it's the same with us. I'm supposed to be the expert on all this stuff, and my back's not hurting. I'm not stretching. I'm not doing my stuff, you know. And luckily for me, like, I have a real close bond with my patients, so I don't have any assistants or anything like that. So whenever it's time for you to start the rehab, I'm showing you the exercises. So luckily for me, at least I get that, you know. Yeah. I have to show patients these certain exercises, and so I'm at least getting that, you know, quite a few times, and maybe at least a couple of times a day, and then, you know, quite a few times during the week. So I guess that's a good thing. That's a benefit of the profession, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm not trapped in the training room. It's just, it tends to be, you know, I have a lot of work to do, entering paperwork or injuries or whatever, but
paperwork's the killer. That's if you want to be a healthcare professional, I told people being a doctor is just writing reports. That's basically it. Write reports a lot more than you see patients.
So, okay. One last question. I think we asked this last time we talked to, and I say Dr. Weiss, but I think you're right. I think it was Dr. Weiss. It was way back, maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And your thoughts on popping knuckles or joints, because obviously, like you said, you're not looking for the pop, but it is kind of synonymous with chiropractors, is go get your back popped.
Yeah.
And so what are your thoughts on,
you know, from every, it was a huge question when we started school. We're all sitting there, and when you first get in, you know, you do your, what's called basic health sciences. So you're doing all your microbiologies, your pathologies, your histologies, and all that kind of stuff, learning about the cells and all that, I guess, kind of boring stuff, but you have to know it. It's your foundation. Right. If you don't know how these cells are working, you don't know how the disease progresses. So we're going through that, and we're all just like waiting for the day that we can have, because all these teachers were either MDs or PhDs in whatever subject we're taking. So finally, when we get into our next level classes, which is actual clinical stuff, that's when we finally start to get chiros as teachers. And so as soon as we get in there to the chiro, we're like, so popping your knuckles is bad for you, and that's going to give you arthritis. And it goes completely against like what we're doing. We're actually popping these joints and moving them so that you don't get arthritis. So yeah, popping your knuckles is not a bad thing. I guess if you did it in a certain way and it was like traumatic to the joint, then that could accelerate arthritis. Because if you look at what causes that, anytime you stress bone, your body lays down more bone because it thinks it needs more support there. And then the other part of it is it wastes away the cartilage, which is like the lining of all the synovial joints. And so I guess if you do it in a traumatic way, like if you just like really aggressive with it, maybe it's bad, but just popping it or like moving it around and loosening it up, you know, that's not really a bad thing. You're actually just keeping the joint mobile. In fact, you know, I get people that come in with, you get osteoarthritis a lot in the fingers. Mm-hmm. So I get people that I have an electrician that comes in, and he has really bad in his thumb joint. And so actually part of the treatment with him is I mobilize that thing as much as I can. And he basically starts crying because it hurts so much. But we're trying to free up a lot of those restrictions that he has in there and get that joint moving better again. So yeah, all in all, it's not really a bad thing unless you're doing it in a bad way. So I don't really think there's a right or wrong way. I mean, most people just kind of push on it until it pops. But like I said, I guess if somebody goes in there and just really mashes down hard, that extra pressure over time, like done out thousands of times over years, could probably be an issue later on in life.
Yeah. And again, I don't have an answer. And, you know, if you use Dr. Google, then you get all four sides of the story. So
yeah. In fact, there's different theories on what the pop even is. And like, I guess the one everybody's subscribing to now is that it's nitrogen gas built up in there, but yeah, I guess it makes sense. It makes more sense than the rest of them. And some of them are saying like the tendon or the ligament or whatever is snapping against the joint. That makes no sense at all, because we know the tendon goes straight across. And if I'm just pushing my finger down, that tendon's not snapping across anything. And plus the snap sounds different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just weird to think that that's gas coming out. You know, when you look at it and it pops, that just doesn't sound like a gas releasing. That's like a high pitched. Sounds like your bone is making a crack.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard to tell. And again, I think that's one of those things, like, we might have the science for that someday. But I always say that. But it's like, there's no reason to argue about something that we don't have the science to prove. You know, it's kind of like religion. Like, we're not going to sit here and argue about religion, because either side you pick, you can't prove it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a belief. And so that's kind of where we're at with a lot of this stuff. Like, at least with this, though, we have studies and research that show that it's beneficial. A lot of patients have been helped with chiropractic adjustments. But as far as what's making the noise, it doesn't really matter, because that's not, you know, that's not what's making the patient feel better. It's actually moving the joint and getting it moving again. So I doubt they'll ever invest a lot of money into figuring out why it pops.
Yeah,
it just does.
All right. So you mentioned, what was it, Graston? You said Graston earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, Graston is the same concept as you're removing the adhesions, right? So
yep.
You may, where, you know, that guy that I saw was using his thumb to dig into that girl's quad.
Mm-hmm.
You would essentially do the same with, you know, a tool,
mm-hmm.
but you're still trying to release the adhesions to allow the fibers to lay down correctly and repair faster. That's yep. The concept.
Yeah. And so along with Graston, there's another one that you use your hands, but it's called active release. And so active release is I really like that one. Again, I'm not certified in it. It's one of those that's been trademarked. But you know, just seeing some practitioners do active release, it's a nice treatment in that you're taking the tissue across a fixed point, which is you mashing down really hard. So your thumb, your fingers, your hands, whatever, and you're taking that tissue and stretching it through there. So at the same time you're getting active movement, you're also releasing out that myofascial tissue. So with Graston, we're taking these stainless steel tools, and I'm certified in Graston, but there's a lot of different ones. So basically what they call it is instrument assisted soft tissue manipulation. So you take any kind of a tool, most of them are stainless steel. And the reason for it is, like with Graston, you do scanning. So you can kind of lightly rub it across the skin, and then all of a sudden you feel these vibrations. Those vibrations are really the adhesions that you get. And so if you get it through there and you break up all those adhesions, you get what's called petechiae, which is like little red marks. So like if a leech was on you and it was like sucking on your skin really hard, you'd get those red marks. So those petechiae is kind of showing that those are the adhesions, and now that we're breaking them up, the blood flow is able to come back through there. Didn't make a lot of sense to me, because I was like, if you rub an area, it's going to get red. It's a different kind of red. It's like a purplish red. I guess kind of a non-politically correct way to say it is like a bunch of little hickeys on your skin. So that's the kind of color you're looking at. They're not as big as that, but you know, you got little red marks everywhere. And it's funny, because as you're going through the Graston treatment, you get a lot of those red marks at first, and then they start to not show up as much. And then if you go to a different area, if it's just because you're aggravating the area, you're expecting to see those red marks. You'll do it, and then you go even harder, and they just never come. The skin gets red, but you don't get those red marks. So it seems to make sense with that. Again, Oriental medicine was using something similar to Graston for centuries. They call it, and I don't pronounce it correctly, but basically they call it gua sha. Gua sha. Yeah. So they use like these jade or antler type tools that they made, and they go through and they scrape the skin and they use it against the tissue. So this stuff's been going around for a really long time. But of course, once Western medicine grabs a hold of it, you know, we call it our own things. We trademark it. We charge thousands of dollars to get certified in it. And basically everybody's doing some sort of the treatment, you know, and some people decide to get certified in it, and some others don't. I will say that getting the certification kind of gives you a somewhere to start, and at least a mindset. So when you see it, you're going through your head, like what you're going to do with it. So when we learn these different techniques, it just makes you better equipped to treat that patient fully. Instead of just trying out different things, like, you know, this works. And so you go straight for it, 'cause you've had experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was something else I was going to say about one other treatment, but I forgot. Well, I guess maybe I'll remember it at some point.
Yeah, I've seen someone do the active release, and I like it. And I've, you know, he just showed us, he's like, you know, obviously this is, I can't say active release because like that's trademarked, and mm-hmm. but I'll just show you how to do it or how I do it. And then, you know, if you want to try it, that's all on you. And so, you know, I actually did it with my wife. I think it was her calf was mm-hmm. tight. And so, you know, I just found a bony prominence, pressed down hard, and then you back it up, and then you have her flexing and, you know, extending her foot. And then, and she was like, I like it. It feels like it's stretching. But, you know, again, I just did that once or twice. I don't do that here because it's not something I'm trained to do, so I'm not really comfortable. But.
Yeah, doing it, yeah. And it's one of those, like, like the way I do it, I can't say I do active release, but I do a treatment that's like it's an active movement while I'm stripping out the tissue. I don't focus in on the actual joint like active release does. I'll do a little bit of that, but mostly on the joint or the bony prominence, like you said, where a tendon would attach or a ligament is attaching. I'm doing what's called the continuum distortion, where I'm trying to push that fibrous tissue back in, and release it out. What I do is I actively move your whole muscle through my finger. So let's say I'm doing a tricep, you know, I'll latch in here on each side. You know, you have the different heads of the tricep. Mm-hmm. And so I'll latch in on each side, and I'll get you to start with your muscle extended, or no, sorry, start with it shortened and then flex down so that you can extend it. And so while I'm holding on to it, it's going underneath my thumb, and then we're just really stripping it out. So where I like to use it the most is in that muscle tendon junction. So tricep, most of the muscles here, tendons right around here. So I'll get right on that area, and I'll just strip it out right through there, and seem to get really, really good results with it. And it's just something that I started doing. And as soon as you start seeing that like sometimes you do things because you're just punting and you're like, I don't know what's going on with this patient. Mm-hmm. And you start doing it and it seems to work. So you do it on another patient and it seems to work really good. And so now I've gotten to the point where I develop these different techniques that I use for certain injuries because they seem to work the best. Yep. And as long as they keep working, that's great. If they don't, then I go into the other types of things that I know until we can get it. And then, of course, if it never gets better, it's like, I don't think there's anything I can do for you. You know, let me send you to this other doctor and maybe you can get some injections or something like that. But yeah, working with other doctors is good in that aspect. I was working with an ortho once, and he sent me a knee case. And so the knee, you know, the lady came in with knee pain. So she goes running. She was training for the marathon or half marathon. She goes running and she starts to get this pain in the back of her knee. Well, you already know there's not a whole lot there. You're already thinking hamstring or something like that, but the hamstring tendons go on each side of the knee. And she was like, it's dead center in the back of my knee. Well, there's only the popliteus back there. And then a little bit of the posterior structures of the actual knee, you know, the bones of the femur and the tibia and not really much of the fibular head, but, you know, they have the tibia back there. So I was like, well, there's not a whole lot. So I'm going through my exam and I spent a good 40 minutes on this patient. And the whole time I'm thinking, man, I can't figure this out. Like the way she's complaining about her pain is not making any sense to me. So I finally tell her, I go ahead and do the punt, you know, and I'm like, well, there's not a whole lot back there. You know, it's not the most common things that I was thinking it was. But I'm gonna go ahead and just work on the soft tissue back there and let's see how it responds. And she's like, okay. So I do a little bit of soft tissue release. I take her knee and I'm like extending it out and I'm just working all in that posterior area of the knee. And while I'm doing it, I tell her, you know, there's not a lot back here. There's a popliteus, and I went down in the popliteus, which is really hard to get through back there. It's really, really deep. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is going to hurt just because I have to get so deep. And then she's like, that's not really where the pain is. And I'm like, if we're ruling that out, the only other thing that could be back there is what's called a Baker cyst, which is like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but like I keep going blank. The bursal sac kind of leaks and extends down. And so it's like, it makes this little reservoir lower down in the knee because it's higher up in the leg. And so you get this pouch back there. Doesn't usually cause pain though, unless it becomes inflamed like a bursitis. And so I told her that, and I was like, I don't know if that's it because usually it doesn't cause pain. At least that's what the books say. And so I go through the treatment and I lay her down and I put her on some stem and some ice because I created a lot of irritation to the area. And while I'm sitting there, I start looking at my computer, and I still haven't told her. I really don't know what it is. That's just like a shot to your pride. And finally, I was just like, you know what? What did Dr. So-and-so say, the doctor that referred her over? And she's like, oh, he told me he had no idea. That's why he's sending me to you. And I just was, I let out a sigh of relief. And I was like, thank God I'm not the only one, you know? And yeah, later on, they sent her out for an MRI. We finally sent her out because she was getting minimal results, wasn't getting a lot better. And turns out she had a Baker cyst. So just going after the most commons will save you a lot of times. So, yeah. But yeah, it's always fun to do that kind of. The point of the story was, you know, just doing that soft tissue, you just kind of, if that's where they're hurting, start doing it there. And a lot of times you'll get the results that you're looking for. The body has a really good way of healing itself. We just sometimes have to help it out some. And so that's mainly what I'm doing, just helping the body heal itself. Even with surgery, the body's healing itself. You know, the surgeon's just helping it clean it up so that it can heal up better. So anything you do, the body's healing itself.
All right. Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
if someone is in a small town and, you know, is interested in getting someone to a chiropractor to help them out on the sidelines, what are some of the, if I was going to approach you and ask you to, hey, can you be my team doc? What are some of the things that you would be looking for, or what would be kind of the best way for them to do that?
You definitely want to look at someone that has that, one, passion in sports, you know, they have that experience. You know, a lot of chiros come from a background of sports and biomechanics. So that's important to look for. But I think the most important is that they have some sort of experience with sports injuries, because it's just a different thing. The mechanisms for the injuries are different. If you have that experience, you know, an athlete, like, I don't get to see their injury a lot. Like, sometimes you guys get to see them on the sidelines. So if they come to my clinic, just having that experience of being a sports-minded doctor, I can kind of figure out the injury just by hearing them talk. If I didn't have that experience of playing sports or being exposed to sports, watching sports my whole life on TV, I wouldn't really understand that as well. So I guess one of the things that they should look for is someone that has that experience. You know, look for someone that does the soft tissue, somebody besides that just adjusts. I'm not saying they're bad. You know, adjustments can definitely help an athlete, but I like to approach it, you know, like a total process, like we were talking about earlier. So if I was them, I would look for someone that has the experience, that does a lot of different kinds of treatments. They don't necessarily have to have fancy clinics or anything like that, just as long as they understand a lot of these soft tissue injuries. That would be the most important thing. And it should be super easy to approach a chiro. You know, a lot of times it's the other way around. The chiros are looking for the athletic trainer to try and get in with the team or something like that, you know, to try and extend a handout. So I don't see it being too much of a hard thing for a trainer to do, even if it's a small little town, unless they just don't have that kind of a chiro, and then that would be an issue. But other than that, it should be easy. They could basically just call up and say, hey, we're interested in talking to you about coming out and dealing with the team. I'm sure they'll, you know, 99 times out of 100, it'll be like, yeah, okay, it sounds great to me. Yep. And they'll do it.
So you got to figure out the logistics. So,
yep.
All right. Well, maybe we'll continue that conversation afterwards. Okay. All right. So any parting thoughts, any summaries?
No, I think I went into a lot of different stuff. You know, basically, I guess, you know, one of my reasons for coming here is I've always trying to reach out to the public, because there, you know, the not to throw the medical profession under the bus, but historically, back a couple of generations ago, and even the last generation, and even a little bit to this day, it's always been a business thing. Like, you know, chiropractic is encroaching in on our business. Let's try and squash them out. And so they did a really good job of marketing a lot of bad publicity. I mean, you always hear about, oh, they're gonna paralyze you, or they're gonna stroke you out because they popped your neck. And I don't have I should have memorized the stats, but, they have a bar graph, and it shows like how many injuries you get from surgeries, and how many are injuries or deaths, or injuries or deaths from just NSAIDs like ibuprofen and naproxen and stuff like that. And then it has like how many strokes you have from chiropractic adjustments. So the total number is really low. It's not like this thing like, oh, you're flipping a coin, you might get paralyzed or something if you go see us. I mean, we're well trained in that aspect. And you got to think too, that we're doing this because we care. We're not doing this to get rich, or else we would have done something else. Nobody is a doctor because they want to get rich. Not nowadays. Reimbursements are nothing anymore. And there's so much paperwork, but anyways, you know, we're doing this because we care. So we're not going to purposely hurt somebody. So if you come in and something doesn't look stable, I have enough training to know that I shouldn't adjust that. Or let's go get an x-ray, or let's dig a little deeper before I do an adjustment. So in just about every chiropractor you go to, every profession has their idiots, I guess you can say, so that make us all look bad. But for the most part, every chiropractor is well-trained and well-versed as far as when to adjust, when not to adjust. And the other thing to leave on is that we do different things, you know. So, like, I do sports and nutrition. I have friends that do sports and acupuncture. You know, other friends that do work injuries and auto accidents a lot. So, you know, we all do something a little bit different, you know. So that's another thing to take away from it. You know, your chiro is a specialty in that they do chiro, so that's our specialty, but there's also subspecialties where we do different things that we focus on. So as long as they do a good job, and with any doctor you see, if you don't feel right, get a second opinion. It never hurts to get a second opinion. So I guess that's about it. Just trying to clear up some of the misinformation about chiropractic and stuff like that was my main goal, and then let people know about the sports treatments that I do.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, my dislike for chiropractics was because other athletic trainers said that they didn't like them or whatever. And talking with Dr. Weiss last time, and you know, talking with you now, it's that you're on the same. We're on the same team. We may do things a little different. We may think things differently, but if we all think the same, then if we're wrong, then there's no other option.
Yeah.
So you know, if you're wrong and I'm right, or I'm right, I mean, I'm wrong and you're right, then the athlete still benefits because we're part of a team working together. So I enjoy learning. Mm-hmm. It's a big reason we do this. But I thank you for coming out. So
yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun getting to talk about everything that I do.
All right, so I'm going to close it out. As I mentioned earlier, GHATS, the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, sponsors CEU opportunities. We'll also be having our Student Athletic Trainer Workshop coming up in January. U of H Master of Athletic Training Program, they should be here next week. They're here most of the time now. Either Dr. Mark Knobloch or Dr. Josh Allen bringing some of their Masters of Athletic Training students, which is another great way for us to build our audience, to interact with people, to educate the future of our profession as athletic trainers. And I'm really thankful for them. Memorial Hermann, obviously the backdrop. And as we've talked about, you know, they've done a lot of things here for us. They've streamlined the process of getting to the doctor in x-ray or surgery. And, you know, we've really benefited from them being a sponsor for our school district. So I definitely appreciate them. You can check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. I'll put up a link on there to Dr. Ramirez's website and his Facebook and Twitter. I'll put all that up in there in just a minute. So you can watch live almost every single Wednesday on our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There's an email list on the side. That's where I'll email out the links early to register. And if you want to join the conversation on Twitter, mine is PHS SportsMed, or using hashtag TheSMB. On Google Plus is Sports Medicine Broadcast. On Facebook.com, it's PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One group, Dr. Eric Ramirez of Chirotecture, that's a wrap.